Welcome to Mastering the Attention Economy Podcast. I'm your host, Ari Lewis. Human attention is a scarce resource that millions of companies across the globe are fighting for. Once a week, I interview entrepreneurs, executives, and industry leaders on how they earn attention for their brands using social content and media. To learn more about my work, visit arilewis.com and subscribe to my twice-a-week newsletter on how to earn attention for your brand. Today's guest is Joe Ferraro. Joe is a teacher, professional speaker, and podcast host. He runs the 1% Better podcast, where he has interviewed people such as James Clear and Seth Godin.
I mean, am I finally connecting with Ari Lewis, the fastest DMer in the Midwest?
I don't know about that, but I'm probably on Twitter a bit too much. Which, if you guys don't follow me on Twitter, it's amlewis4. So you know, give me a follow. But I'm really, really excited to have you on. You know, I've listened to a few of your podcasts, and it's funny because like if I just knew you through Twitter and through your podcast, I wouldn't actually know that it's not your full-time gig. Your full-time gig is being a teacher. So, you know, I know you teach 12th grade English. I really wanted to know though, as a first question and sort of, you know, aligning with your theory on high velocity questions, which we'll get to later. Can you talk about, you know, for the classes that you teach that aren't elective or that are electives, how do you market them to students and how do you sell them on the experience of going and taking a Joe Ferraro class?
It's funny because when I think about marketing, I have some holes in my game when it comes to the podcast, right? I'm doing a slow, steady growth and finding my niche and the people that I seek to serve. And then in the classroom, it's the recipe that I should probably be using in the podcast, which is number one, try to have a quality product. Right. At the end of the day, I don't know how many of the listeners had a horrible English high school experience, but most people I talked to didn't love their high school English class. My goal begins and ends with making the opposite experience for my students. I want them to have a great experience. So I hope that they're getting a good experience first and foremost. Then I got to tell you, Ari, I try to intentionally be different. I think that the mundanity of high school is a story that like everyone knows and we just kind of ignore it. It's like, yeah, high school's boring. Every student says it, and let's not do a thing about it. And I try to not separate the joy and fun of learning. Like, I actually try to insert it back in, and it's kind of seen as radical by some people. They're like, wait, like, Joe's the fun time guy. No, like, we're also doing, like, heavy lifting. We're reading, like, incredible texts. We're doing creative writing. But I think that's a big piece of it. And then the last piece is, I try to create memorable experiences. I think it's easy to say in an English class, reading, writing, listening, thinking, but can we inject a few things that are memorable that when the class is over, maybe at the dinner table, they're saying, we played this game called Human Highlighter, where Mr. Ferraro asks us 12 random questions about our lives. No other teacher is asking that. And believe me, I'm not saying that to put myself above any other teachers, but I'm actually trying to put them to the side in the sense that I walk alongside of them, but I'm trying to do things differently because I really pride myself in trying to look from the seat of the student.
Yeah, and I definitely, you know, I didn't enjoy my high school career. And looking back, you know, having teachers like you, it's hard as a student, I think, probably when you're in 11th and 12th grade to realize, you know, what you know now, but trying to infuse that and teach that to, you know, those 11th and 12th graders because, you know, they're in their own mindset. But, you know, as a teacher, have you ever thought about like, oh, I want to, you know, go full time and do the podcasting and do, you know, the stuff that you're doing in the podcasting world? Or, you know, I know you talked about in that introduction how teaching has helped you with your podcasting. Do you think it wouldn't be possible because you actually need the teaching for the podcasting?
It's good framing. And the quick answer is no, I don't want to leave the classroom. I want to do public speaking and some of the new coaching endeavors that I've taken on in addition to teaching. And I like experiences. I like projects, but it's wonderful. And my job is too good to leave. And I don't mean that financially, although, you know, in Westchester County, New York, teachers are paid, you know, at a fair rate as far as I'm concerned. But I like additional challenge. I like the cyclical nature, Ari, of if I learn something from James Clear, I can actually put it in the classroom for a 17-year-old kid the next day. If I learn something from a kid and how they ask the question later that week in the podcast, I can talk about how I don't think kids ask enough questions. I think they're afraid to. I think they're afraid of looking foolish. I think it's a huge problem. And one kind of feeds the other. So I the only thing I worry about at all is people looking at me and say, well, he's a high school teacher, so he can't talk to businesses. Well, I'm really into communication. And I have a lot of passion for what I do, but I fully want to stay in both worlds and just be an and guy. I don't want to be an or guy.
So, you know, you talked about questions and like asking questions as a good thing. And one of the things that, you know, I mentioned in the beginning of this podcast was high velocity questions. I think that a lot of podcasts, they're too long and they just drone on about like the introduction stuff. And it's like, if you want to go read about a guest, you could go like Google him or go on his Twitter and stuff. It's like, you know, I try to like go straight into it and ask questions that like, even if I have a popular guest on that's on other podcasts that people aren't asking. So, you know, can you talk about, you know, what high velocity questions are and how people can use it in their podcast, but also how it's helped you, you know, create more compelling interviews and made you a better interviewer?
Well, first of all, you succeed at it, man. I've looked up at your shows are 21 minutes and 49 seconds, 21 minutes and 38 seconds, incredibly consistent with a lot of the things you do. And when you give a tight window like that, you kind of set up guardrails. Within those guardrails, there's creativity that can flourish. So you more than anyone else are really benefiting from those hard-hitting questions. I was pleased from a marketing standpoint that if you Google high velocity questions, it's actually the first thing that comes up. And you were really kind in sharing that. It must have hit a chord with you. And I don't think it's anything revolutionary, but I had to ask science folks. I was like, am I talking about speed? Am I talking about velocity? And after I all said and done, you know, for me, a high velocity question is someone that accomplishes more than one thing at the same time, right? So we're moving in a direction and we're moving fast. And I hate to bring up a negative, but sometimes, very rarely, it's helpful to teach from that standpoint. I recently heard a host on a podcast, and I have nothing but respect for podcast hosts, open up with this question. Hey, before we get started, I'd just like to ask all my guests to tell us a little bit about their story. Now, in a 22-minute podcast, could you imagine how long I could possibly talk about that? Like, I literally could go and tell a 40-minute version of it. We'd run out of time. I could tell a 30-second version of it. You put the ball in my court, which traditionally we grew up saying, hey, let the guest talk more, more, more. I don't have a problem with the guest talking more, but I want to allow Ari to get back in and clarify and follow up. So a lot of times my first question might be something, hey, I noticed that you're a cross-country skier. What has that taught you about the nature of fear? First question, high velocity. It sets the tone. It surprises the guest. And recently what I've done, and I guess for maybe the last 25 episodes, I've scripted the first question. So you don't have those clunky starts, but then I have no other questions that I'm married to. So I know what I want to ask first. It's kind of like the 49ers of the 80s and 90s where they scripted their first 15 plays. And then from there, it's all follow-ups. But high velocity questions is something I kind of thought up. I wrote about it. And I've been trying to live it, asking questions that do a number of things at once.
So yeah, it's funny you talk about that what is your story? Like, I hear that so much, and something I didn't know until I was being a podcast host was you really want to ask questions that force constraint among the guests, because when you ask an open-ended question, and I think part of it also has to do when you have a podcast guest that's on a lot of podcasts, they sometimes don't think the host is good and they feel like it's their job to make the answer longer to help the host. And like, if most people or everyone I've had, it's their first interview with me and they don't know how I am as a guest. So I've been trying to ask more and more constrained questions. And that's a sort of a great point you made about like, what's your story? And I think, you know, hopefully for those listening, we tried to set the tone when it's like, you're a teacher, you know, what are the experiences from teaching that have helped you impact podcasting? And that's how I came across you was because of that high velocity question. Have you had other people reach out to you and be like, oh, this is such a great framework?
I've had a few, but I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and say it's been the reception that I expected. And here's what I've uncovered from that. I truly believe that we have an opportunity here where I thought about even driving to the interview today. I thought about this. Podcasts are getting a bad name in some circles right now as this excuse to take someone out for a cup of coffee. I completely reject that. I get the mindset behind it, but the amount of preparation you do for your guests, right? Yeah, you're thinking strategically. I get that. But you're also honoring the guests by being prepared, asking curious questions. And I think that the people who start podcasts are the brave people that raise their hands and say, I have questions I want to ask. I teach students every day. They don't ask a lot of questions. I love them to death. They don't ask a lot of questions. They're afraid. There's a blockage. Maybe there's not a way that they know how to ask better questions. And I think that just starting a podcast isn't enough, but it signals to me that the people who start this endeavor have questions they want answered. They have curiosity they want met. And I kind of just respect the heck out of the podcast world for that. You know, I think it's not some pet project that starts in a basement and then just, oh, we just kind of, you know, roll out some intro music. There's a lot that goes into it. And then I think it's a fantastic time to be a podcaster.
Yeah. And I have a few follow-up questions, points there. I think the first is, you know, I actually did tweet like, don't take out someone for a cup of coffee, you know, go start a podcast. And I agree with that sentiment. Still, I think to your point, you helped refine it. And you know, Twitter is known for, say short, easy things and don't put like, you know, say a statement and then add all the exceptions to it because then it won't go viral. So, yeah, your point is really well taken. But I think also the people who are prepared for the coffee meetings are the same people that are going to be prepared for doing a podcast. Like when I would do those coffee meetings or when I would try to network with people, I looked up their background. Like I had questions. I had an agenda going in, whether they knew it or not. So I think, you know, when you do these podcasts, like, you know, in the beginning, by the way, I always did research, but I never had notes. And now and you can't see it. I have some notes and I have like the first question done similar to you, but yeah, I don't have like a fixed agenda, but like it's really important to do research on your guest and that you should be doing that for coffee meetings and networking as well. So I think if you're doing that already for coffee meetings, it definitely makes sense to try to start a podcast because I think you'll have the success if you're already, you know, doing that research. But you know, as a follow-up question, and I don't want to talk about the business of podcasting, but today there was a big acquisition in the podcasting field and it was like a $325 million, ad tech podcasting software. And that was still like a small purchase when contrasted with, you know, other software businesses. And I think one of the, complaints and worries about podcasting has been that audio is like a very small audience compared to like YouTube or compared to like other social apps. You know, what would you say about, you know, you growing your audience and, you know, limit it to your experience of like, you know, how have you seen that, that trend as well on a personal level? Like, do you think if you did this as a YouTube channel or you took a different medium, you know, your growth would be the different same? And like, what are the benefits of starting a podcast? Like, you know, why are people doing it if this growth is so-called limited?
Well, there's a couple of pieces to that question, which I'd love to take apart. So number one, I think podcast is actually in some weird ways in its infancy. I think that in the way you can test that is ask somebody over 30 what a podcast is and watch them stumble, right? And not to be elitist and say, oh, you don't know what a podcast is. But literally, they wouldn't be able to put into words like exactly what it is. Cars are now being built with podcast buttons. The other piece of the puzzle is the intimacy of a relationship with a podcast host, whether it's a mystery show or an interview show, is unparalleled in any other medium, in my opinion. I mean, I've seen YouTube stations, but a lot of times people are watching it passively. I see the value in it. I see from a distribution standpoint, it's a killer thing, and you're doing a great job over there. But I think there's something to be said about putting the headphones on, locking in. Right now, people are driving in their cars, giving us their attention. You know, that magic word that you're after. So is it as big of a chunk of the pie? No. But is it a loyalty piece? Is it someone that who's going to capture it? I have mistakenly called podcast hosts my friends. Like literally people I've never met, even on Twitter. I'm like, oh yeah, my friend Brian. Like, and because I've listened to his podcast and he's in my head. I was listening to Seth Godin on the way to our interview, and I felt like I knew him. I've met him twice. I've interviewed him twice. But I literally was hearing his words rattle around that I was able to connect them with other people. And if you're talking about, you know, buying a piece of real estate in someone's head and heart, I think it's a place to invest. I really do. And I think we're just getting started. Last piece, you said, what's the benefit of starting a podcast? Many. But I have a caveat. I have two, in fact. One, are you going to work at the craft? I think the single most overlooked part of a podcast is the actual conversation itself. The business hat on, you might appreciate this. I bought damngoodconversations.com. And I don't yet know exactly what it's going to look like, but it was too good to pass up because someone on Twitter said, what's your goal of the podcast? I said, to have a damn good conversation. I said, what would Ari Lewis do? He would say, buy damngoodconversations.com. And now it sits and I'll wait for the mastermind plan. But on a serious note, let's work on the conversation itself, the listening, the questions, the follow-up. And finally, what is your definition of success? If it's metric driven, I would say it's probably not a great time to get into the podcast game. But if it's going to say, I have an opportunity to talk to Ari, when we talked on the phone a couple months ago, you know, our relationship kind of built there. I'm going to have a chance to present at this conference. I'm going to do a course eventually on how to have better conversations. If you're hoping to open those worlds to yourself and make you a better teacher or accountant, I think the benefits are huge that way.
Yeah. And there's two things to follow up on there. One is, you know, you talked about those one-sided relationships. I've written a lot about it, and I don't know if I've talked about it in the podcast, but the term is parasocial relationship. I don't know if you're familiar with it. And for those listening, that's like the concept of believing that you are friends with someone that has no relationship to you, and the relationship is just completely one-sided. And it's a very common, you know, you see it with Instagram influencers now all the time. And in the Gen Z community, it's called like Stan, which means like, you know, you're in their Stan community of, you know, just dedicated, and like you're friends with them and you're obsessed with them. And then the second part that I wanted to touch on is top of mind. So, you know, a podcast, and to your point, it's not about having the largest audience. It's about having an engaged audience. So, you know, I do this and like, I'm not after a huge, you know, vertical, right? My audience is limited and capped. I'm not going to be a Joe Rogan. I don't think I am. You know, if I am, great, that'd be awesome. But it, the people who listen to my stuff or read my stuff and watch my stuff, it's an opportunity for me to just continue to be top of mind. So I agree with your point about like the accountant, or I think you said the lawyer as well, that makes a ton of sense. You know, one of the recurring themes on your podcast is like 1% better. Is that something that you preach on a personal level that you started, you know, implementing in your podcast? Is that something that came from the podcast guest? Where did that idea come from?
I've been thinking a lot about it even now, 3 years later. I started the podcast July 1st, 2017, but I'm always thinking about it. What does it mean? Did the title direct me, or did I direct the title, almost on a philosophical level? And I think even recently, I've been thinking about this idea of the difference between optimization and chasing that versus chasing just getting a little bit better every day. And as an English teacher and as someone who loves words, I actually do see a difference. I think that there's traps along the way to optimization. Optimization is a very internet-y word, right? Like you could just throw that on a website and like make it seem like that's the goal. For me, I get it. Like I think we're in the same grocery store, but maybe a different aisle. Because for me, it's like, can I go to bed a little bit wiser? You know, I talk about the mindset, language, and behavior of daily improvement. And if I think of my coffee maker, which I'm not far from, I think we have the best coffee maker money can buy. But you know what? There's one in Switzerland that's better. There's one that's $2,000 and it's better. Mine's damn good though. Like it's really, really good. And we found it and we love it. So do I need to kind of search for the optimal coffee maker now? Or can I have some level of satisfaction? I think I can have some level of satisfaction. And then let's do some experiments on the side. Let's see what the Brazilian bean tastes like. Let's see what happens if we grind it a little finer. I don't think I'm searching for optimal, but I want to provide with my guests a way for my audience to just say, what are some strategies I can put in today to just get a little bit better and not pigeonhole myself behind this, you know, perfect is the enemy of good mindset.
Yeah, that's a great point and a great way to think about things. And I think it's a good tangent to my next point, which is, you know, getting, you know, talking about 1% better requires you having good guests on your podcast who can make the podcast better. And I liked in a recent blog post, and I know you didn't coin this phrase, you saw it in a book, but avoiding boring people. So, you know, can you talk about how you know, find some of the guests and how you convince them to be on the podcast? I mean, you've had, you know, as you mentioned, Seth Godin on, James Clear, Roy Firestone from ESPN, and a host of other, you know, great guests. Would love to just hear, you know, how you find them.
Yeah, I think how I find them is the domino effect, right? So you find one person's work that, well, let's give Pandora a little plug here. I'm sure they'll be sponsoring your show. You find a song you love. For me, it's maybe Skinny Love by Bon Iver, right? So like Bon Iver, I'm not the hippest guy, but Skinny Love is a great song. If I plug that into Pandora, they're going to have a pretty good algorithm to show me what else I like. When I think of a Seth Godin, he's a guy I had a relationship with for years because I emailed him cold when I was a teacher, not a podcaster, asking him questions about my students. So that one has kind of a specific and a pretty cool story that we could share over beverages someday. But the domino effect happens when you say, like, well, who does Seth respect? And now Seth respects this guy. And then who does he respect? Oh, he respects this woman who is doing amazing work out of this area. And I think you'll run into some cul-de-sacs if you go with some of the high name guests, which are not exclusive to my show. But I love that. It's kind of the concept, you've seen it and you've probably written about it. If you want a book list, you go to the back of the book and look at the notes and the recommended reading. It's that concept. How I get the guests, I think, is a two-part thing. I think it's writing a really good email that's not parasocial. And I think that it's also, I have to be candid, I think there is a piece of signaling there, right? I think it's a piece of the puzzle where we talk about, if they see Debbie Millman's on the show, they're more likely to do it. If they see a John Gordon's on the show, they're more likely to do it. There's something there to be said about signaling.
Yeah, and it's so powerful, signaling. And I think that's what a lot of people don't realize when you talked about consistency, is like, even if the quality isn't that great, which, you know, some people are like, oh, quality is so important, it has to be perfect. And you said, you know, perfection is the enemy of good, or I always screw up that quote, something like that. And like, it doesn't even have to always be great content. It could be okay content, but you just produce it. That like signaling effect occurs where people are like, oh, he's been doing this for a year, it must be good. And then people just automatically think it's good. And I'm starting to actually see that with my work, which is like kind of concerning to me at times, where like, I'll write something that, because I know I have to write that week, and I just know it's not that good. It's not my best work. I need to get something out. And I have a Google form at the bottom, and like a bunch of people reply like, oh, this was great, one of your best pieces. And I'm like, are they reading the same thing as me? Or maybe I'm just setting high standards for myself. But it's funny that you talk about the signaling, because I see that from both perspectives, my own and the outside. But, you know, one of the questions as we begin to wrap things up that I also wanted to make sure we asked is, we talked a lot about like what makes a good podcast host, doing research, you know, how to find guests. But, you know, when should you not start a podcast? And I know we touched on it a bit. But, you know, for those out there who, you know, let's say they are willing to put in the time, right? And it's either an individual looking to launch one or an individual looking to launch it for a brand. When does it maybe not make sense to do it? Assuming, you know, you have the ability to do it, whether it's both putting in the time and effort.
I think the first thing to think about is this idea that sometimes we fool ourselves into thinking we have unlimited human bandwidth, right? I don't know. And I wonder what people would say listening in. It'd be fun to hear from them. I wonder if people realize how much goes into a podcast. And it's a dangerous kind of parallel, because on some level, there isn't much that goes into it, right? Launching it, having a mediocre podcast, Googling how to get it on iTunes and Stitcher and Riverside and whatnot, that is the basic stuff. But the other stuff is so big. How good do you want it to be? What's going to be that level of satisfaction? You say you have a high standard for your work, and you do. I like to think I do too, but at the same time, we also have to let our audience decide. You know, John Lennon famously thought Imagine wasn't a good song. So when you think of, you know, if he's able to not take pride in that song, there's something there to be said. So I think that the first thing is the human bandwidth. I mean, I just, my recent episode 159, it was a 3-minute episode where I talked about a decision I made, where I basically took Derek Sivers' idea, hell yeah or no. And I said, I had an opportunity to apply for something at work, and I thought I'd be good at it. And I thought the students would benefit from it. And ultimately, I couldn't find a hell yeah. I could not find a way to separate myself. I want to do some podcast coaching. I want to do some public speaking. I want to continue to be good as an interviewer. How do I take this on and justify it? So I think that would be, if you hear nothing else, don't start a podcast if you genuinely feel stretched thin. And then I'll reiterate what I said earlier. You should not start a podcast if you think you're just going to light up the iTunes chart. Or if the idea, I have this great idea for a podcast, which usually just means title, like, I have an awesome title. It's like two dads rapping. And you're just like, the idea itself might not be good, but that's not important. Even if it was good, the other things that have to happen to make it a successful podcast, it's a lot. So I think you just need to go into it clear-eyed.
Yeah, and I like that framework that Derek Sivers talks about of like, it should be a hell yeah. If it's not, it's a no, because I think that's the hardest thing that people, you know, can't do, especially busy people, is like say no to things. Like I have this fake assistant I use sort of, and I'm sometimes like, Amy will find time if there's time available. And then it's like, oh, there's no time available, unfortunately, so that I don't have to, you know, deal with things. Because yeah, some people, and it goes back to that coffee thing we talked about of like, people just want to speak to you for 15 minutes and like pick your brain. And it's like the flip side here of like, that's not helpful, right? Like going back to the podcasting, it's like, how do you add value? How do you, you know, add value to your guests and vice versa. But you know, as we wrap things up, my last question that I always ask people is like, if you were starting podcasting over, you know, what's one lesson that you have or like one thing you would do differently knowing what you know now?
Start sooner. And that's going to sound so contrary to our last little diatribe, right? But here's the thing, you know, I don't know if you'll ever decide that you want to start a family, but you're not going to feel ready. You know, I mean, I married the love of my life, but guess what? I still tried to extend the engagement. I had a good friend who knew the both of us. And I said, how many times can I fly the helicopter around the airport runway before I land? She's like, it's getting thin. It's getting real thin. I'm like, ooh. So now the only reason I proposed is because I didn't want to lose her to someone else in a way. In other words, you know who the right one is when you don't want to have imagined her be with someone else. Well, you know, that's kind of how I think about it, right? Like, we're not going to be ready for that. So if you really have an itch, like I think I tweeted this recently, a kid said, well, I'm thinking of starting a podcast. I'm like, congratulations, you just started a podcast. Because no one says that, right? When's the last time you saw it on Twitter? They're like, I'm thinking of starting a podcast. And then people are like, yeah, totally great. And then he's like, I decided not to do it. So I think if you hear that little voice in your head, heck, I mean, you know, email me, I'll let you know if you should do it. But the reality is, I would have started sooner. But at the same time, I do get into that Zen idea of like, I started when I started, right? And a lot of my whole project is baked into that idea of self-improvement. So I'm still getting better. Like, there's no doubt about it. I have a long way to go.
Well, Joe, thanks so much for joining me. For those who are listening or watching on YouTube, you know, where can they find you? Where can they listen to your podcast?
Yeah, the podcast is called 1% Better. And let's connect on Twitter, man. I'm somewhere in the neighborhood of half of Ari's followers at Ferraro On Air, F-E-R-R-A-R-O. I'm sure it'll be linked in the show notes. I'd love to have a conversation. That's my obsession recently, is having better conversations and helping people do it. And this has been a good one, man. I really appreciate you having me on.
And as Joe said, the links will be in the show notes. So until next time, everyone, see you soon.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, consider giving us 5 stars on iTunes. If you're listening to us on YouTube, consider hitting the like button and commenting on what you enjoyed. I'd really appreciate it.